Fellow gambler, take my hand. I'm your friend. I understand. I've known your guilt, your shame, remorse. I've borne the burden of your cross. I found a friend who offered ease. He suffered too with this disease. Although we had no magic cure, he showed me how we could endure. We talked together side by side. We spoke of things we had to hide. We told of sleepless nights and debts, of broken homes and lies and threats. And so, my weary gambler friend, please take this hand that I extend. Take one more chance on something new. Another gambler helping you. Another gambler helping you.
This episode of The Harmonious Gentleman is brought to you by our friends at Blind Man Brewing, makers of Central Alberta's best craft beer, purveyors of delicious tacos, and hosts of all kinds of harmonious fun. They don't like to brag about it, but they've won Brewery of the Year in Alberta and Best in Show at the Canadian Brewing Awards. Head to Lacombe and check them out.
Well, if podcast episodes were the length of the bike ride in an Ironman triathlon in miles, which follows a 2.5-mile swim and precedes a full marathon, you'd know this has to be episode 112 of The Harmonious Gentleman. I'm Chris.
I'm Tyler.
I'm Graham.
How's it going? I know why you said that, and it's hilarious, but...
You know?
Great.
Why did I say that?
No, I'm not saying it on the air.
Oh, well, I... No, I got a coffee today at Starbucks, and she didn't know. She asked my name, and so she wrote it down. Asked for how to spell it, and then when they called my name, they said Graham.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think some people have seen the name before. Maybe. What do you guys think? Is that?
Is there an alternate way to spell it?
Well, there is G R A E M E.
But that's probably like Scottish or something. And
yeah,
Grime.
Friends with Scene.
Cool fact, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of sports related, and I kind of want to get into sports gambling today, so it's kind of sweet.
Okay.
Can you gamble on marathoners?
Oh, you can gamble on anything.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
You know, the world record holder died recently, hey?
Yeah. They thought he was going to break the two hour marathon right. This year.
In competition.
Yeah.
It's been who impressive. Is that Kipchoge?
Maybe.
I should have known the name. It feels
like he recently broke?
In a car accident. Yeah. Recently broke it, but he's only 25 and he died in a car accident like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. There's a cool video you can watch of I don't know who it was, breaking the 2 hour barrier, but not in competition.
That's in that wind aided tunnel thing?
No, it's outside. It was like a straight line, then a circle, it's behind a pace car and stuff.
Yeah.
And like other runners run in front of him for drafting and they circle out every little while.
Oh, that's cool.
And you could find
so it's like sort of conditions that aren't real a bit.
Yeah, it's like optimal conditions. He still did it.
Yeah.
But you can see people coming in off the, like trying to run alongside of him, like average people. And they're sprinting.
And they can go for like five steps.
He's just like barely even moving and they can't keep up. So, Ty, what's going on, man?
Yeah, I'm trying to fathom swimming. Or no, you said biking. 112
miles. But after a 4 kilometer swim.
That's the part that hurts my mind a little bit, is swimming any distance that's longer than a length.
Yeah.
So in a 25-meter pool, that would be 160 lengths.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Then go to 112-mile, then run a full marathon.
Yeah. Let's put $50 down and go see who can swim the most lengths.
Yeah.
Like without stopping?
Without dying.
Yeah. The deadliest.
Do you lose the $50? Do you have to pay if you die?
Yeah, put it up first.
Guys, I'm really excited.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got a guest today that I've talked to this guest for years about doing the podcast. It just never really worked.
We've talked about this guy for years.
Yes.
On the podcast.
Yeah.
I think he's written into the podcast.
Has he? Yeah.
He's been a lifelong fan.
Mike, welcome.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Mike.
Good friend, Mike. We're going to do a bit of a follow-up on our gambling episode. Is that okay with you guys?
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of... We take turns. This is sort of my episode. Let's be honest. I haven't put a lot of thought into this. I know Mike's going to have good stories. He's going to give us a little bit, maybe on the ground level view of gambling. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I think we can do that.
Yeah.
Am I the gambler or?
You have more experience than we do, I guess.
Fair.
And worked in the industry, which is the cool thing.
Alrighty.
Yeah. Did you listen to our last gambling episode?
I did.
Yeah. Did you have thoughts as you listened?
I was blown away with some of the stats that you guys had.
Yeah, sweet.
Okay. Super sweet.
Anything like housekeeping before we get going here? Too many emails to read at this point. Yeah. Thank you to our last guest, Brian Keating.
Mm-hmm. Amazing response. It was neat to, after interviewing him, to see him do his keynote. That was fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Be like, oh, we've already heard that story.
I love that. I want to see that picture of you with him. Like, you guys look so happy together.
That should go on our social media. Whose phone is that actually on? Is it on mine?
I think it's on yours.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a dumb question then. I haven't looked at it.
Okay, cool. All right, Mike, it's good to have you. We're going to take a little break, and then we're going to ask you lots of questions.
I like it. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome.
Good.
Ty, good to see you, man.
That's good, yeah.
This segment is brought to you by Cilantro and Chive. Delicious and creative dishes, a huge variety of locally crafted drinks, and building community in Red Deer and Lacombe. They're the gents' favorite place to grab a bite.
Welcome back to the show. Mike, look, we didn't invite you on because you're a gambler, per se. Like, this is not like an intervention kind of deal.
Yeah.
But you have experience in the world. Actually, and you're quite an athlete, I should say, as well. Like, you have a sports background.
I dabbled.
And I do want to get into some sports gambling stuff later. Maybe even stuff where it, like, does it threaten the integrity of sport altogether? Kinds of questions maybe later on.
Yeah.
But I want to start with just, like, getting to know who you are. Who are you, Mike?
I'm Mike from Calgary.
Yeah.
And I, been in Red Deer now for about 12 years and just enjoyed my time getting to know people and having fun doing it. So.
Yeah. And you're vice principal.
Yes.
So you're moving up.
Doing the things.
Doing the things.
Yeah.
And I think maybe we can start with like your history, maybe working in the industry of gambling.
Sure. I got into working in casinos when I was in college. I was up in Camrose and a new casino opened up there and they were looking for dealers. So being a college kid that had no money and a lot of spare time, I applied and started dealing there for a couple of weeks. There is some really good people there. It was just a fun atmosphere. Hours were great. And yeah, I ended up becoming a pit boss there and a poker room manager and did that for the rest of my time up at college, so another 3 years. Then a couple of summers just going back to help out for Big Valley Jamboree and going back and dealing and just enjoying that environment. So
were you into games and card games and that kind of thing before? Like, did you know a lot about gaming?
Yeah,
to get that job?
I think, like, I've always been a competitive person, so I think anytime that there's a game of some sort, I'm drawn to it. And I remember, you know, growing up in Calgary, playing lots of cards with my family, just, you know, games like 31 and Go No Peek and stuff like that. And, you know, as you kind of get older, you find different games to play with. And when I was working down in Calgary, we had a group of guys that would get together and play poker. And that's kind of where it started. And yeah, just enjoyed it. So
when you've heard a saying like the house always wins, like, is that true?
100%. 100%.
So your job as the pit boss or the poker room manager, like, what's your role there? Does it have anything to do with the house winning?
No, it's really much just making sure, like, the integrity of the game is, like, not compromised. If you take care of that and you know, there's no opportunity for cheating, the house will win. It's just statistically proven that that's going to happen. So, yeah.
So I have a few questions just about working there.
Yep.
Did you ever feel the things you would see, the people you would see, did you ever feel morally obligated to be like, hey man, you should go home, like, you got to get out of here? Were those common things that you thought about, or were you more just like the business of it, you didn't think about that stuff very much?
No, there was definitely some confliction. Yeah. I found myself quite often struggling with just, you know, quantities of money that were being tossed around. And I think, you know, when people are there having fun, that's one thing and you can enjoy it and you've got a budget and you play and do those things, it's great. But when you see people, you know, get caught up in the rush of it and, you know, poor decisions are made and it starts to impact them in a lot of different ways, it was definitely tough to watch. And as a, you know, 20-year-old kid doing that stuff, it was, I didn't have the life experience to kind of fathom that. So I was intrigued by it, but at the same time, like, really yeah, kind of sad for some people.
Do you have a sense of like the split between people who are there kind of like quote unquote responsibly playing? It's a night out, they have a budget, versus like I just got paid and depending on how this goes, my whole paycheck might be lost by the end of the night.
Yeah, you could tell that the difference between those people really quickly. Yeah, there is generally, if you know someone came in kind of by themselves, that were right to the table or right to a slot machine and then right out kind of thing, you knew what they were there for. And but you know, it was always fun kind of serving those people that were coming in with a group of friends, and you know, they were bringing their $20 in and sitting at a $2 blackjack table and hooting and hollering and just having a good time. So
your job didn't really, like, you were the integrity of the game, keeping it fair, like you weren't really mandated to keep people here, or like that wasn't that your...
No, I thought that like the casino that I worked at did a really good job of, we just wanted customer experience, right? We wanted them to have fun, enjoy themselves, give them the best product that they could have. But yeah, so there was no pressure on us from any management or anything to keep them there and keep them going. I think Alberta's done a good job of kind of setting some of those boundaries, which has been good. So
do you think most casinos, that's their focus, is the once in a while come for a fun night kind of clientele? Or like my perception of casinos is that they are preying on addiction and that they want like that. But I know that there's people who go there for fun. Like when I've gone to a casino, it's for there's a budget. It's, in my opinion, responsible. So I know that that happens, but it feels like a thriving casino needs to focus on like the preying on addiction. But is that, am I wrong about that? Or
I don't think they need to focus on that. I think, you know, addiction is such a crippling disease that it's going to rear its ugly head regardless. So they don't need to focus their efforts onto getting those clientele in. I think, you know, it's our responsibility when we're talking about management there. We want people to play responsibly, right? We don't want them to not ever come back again. So you want to make sure that they're enjoying it and they set boundaries. And, you know, there's people in that building that are able to talk to people about addiction and playing within their limits and stuff. So, yeah, I think for the most part, it's not something that, you know, casinos and the people that own them and run them are really focused on. I think it's a byproduct of it, and people are going to choose to spend money whether it's there or whether it's online gambling or whatever it might be. So yeah,
it's almost like a business that you don't have to advertise, you don't have to really, like, people are going to do it if it's there.
Yeah,
it's
exactly
like a liquor store, like, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever have a problem with somebody, like, because you were involved in making sure things ran smoothly, like was there ever a customer that like lost it? Or
oh yeah, there's all sorts of stories. I remember, you know, when I was poker room manager, it was a couple hundred dollar hand, but a guy had a rough night. He wasn't up a ton. Let me put that different. It was a rough night for him. He was down quite a bit. Okay. anyway, he got his hand in, and he had pocket kings, and it was against pocket queens. And next thing you know, there was a queen on the board, and he lost. And he got up, dropped a big F-bomb, ripped the cards in half, threw them at us, and walked out. And that was that. So that was one that just sticks with me because it was so out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, then, I mean, you always get the occasional one that is interesting with regards to just circumstance and personalities and stuff, which is fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was one that I'll just always remember. So
you're seeing what they all have, like you're monitoring with, like, how do you know what
was going on? So at the end when they were showing their cards to get the money. It was shown that one guy had kings and one had queens, and the kings lost. And funny story with that guy is he ended up getting ripped up pocket kings tattooed on his forearm next time we saw him. So
he was
banned for a year, and when he came back in, that was the first thing he showed us. So
what's the biggest win and or loss you've ever seen?
You know, being in the pits, you don't see a ton of stuff, right? Like within the slot machines, I think the casino I was at, it had one of those $1 million winners there, but we don't interact with them. I've seen a couple, like it was a smaller casino, so there wasn't a huge table limits, but I've seen a couple people walk out with $10,000, you know, up 10,000. And I've seen people, you know, lose 25,000, you know, and some of the farmers came in kind of thing. It was a rural community. Ooh. So
I have a couple questions for you, Mike, to test your knowledge of casinos. Okay. So gambling profits, you can look them up online pretty easily. You talked about this a bit last time, how much Albertans spend every year. VLTs, slot machines, ticket lottery, or electronic bingo. So those are like the lotteries or electronic gambling. What do you think brings in the most money gambling between those things? VLTs, slot machines, ticket lottery, or electronic bingo?
VLTs. That would be my guess.
That's second place. Slot machines are twice as high.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, $1.2 billion for just slot machines in Alberta.
That's funny because I see VLT so much more accessible in all the bars and stuff. Yeah, that does surprise me, right? Yeah. But I guess if you're going to gamble,
like a slot machine has to be in a casino.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So I was looking at some stats.
Yeah.
And I was by that. Like, but yeah.
Tonight I'm going to help our friend Jim with the Thurber Bingo because they earn a little bit of money when you work the bingo towards their kids' sports athletic fees, I think.
Yep.
So Michelle can't go, so I'm going to be handing out bingo cards.
Oh, that's awesome.
What was the bingo number on there?
Electronic bingo is 11 million. I don't know.
I don't know if that's... I don't really know. I haven't been...
I don't know where that would fall into, time, but...
Yeah. Because I haven't had to do a bingo for a while, but...
Yeah.
Mike, just while we're on the topic of you working there, because I am fascinated about working in a place like that. Like, you did it for years.
Yeah.
Did your perception of gambling or gamblers shift over that time? Did you get... more, you know what I'm saying? Like, the more you saw, did it shift your perspective on casinos in general or not really?
On the casino themselves, not really. I kind of always had, you know, the sense that they could be a place of enjoyment for people, but they could also play a real big role in loss and struggle for them.
Yeah.
But the people there, I really found myself having a different perspective on the people that played. They are the regular run-of-the-mill people that are kind and funny and all walks of life. It was interesting. I made some good friends that worked there, as well as a couple that I still keep in contact with that played there constantly.
Yeah.
So
did you play there yourself quite often, like because you worked there? Or did
no,
you
we actually, less? You're are not you allowed to work in the same casino that you work at, which, you know, when you talk about keeping the integrity of that, I think that's key to that.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But we would, you know, after shifts, we would go and play a $20 card game with some friends and stuff. Yeah. So, yeah.
We have that same rule. We can't be on our own podcast, our own guest.
That's right.
Same rule.
We've tried, but we've had to stick to that. Do you think a Netflix-style office show about life in a casino would be successful?
It would be hilarious. The characters from the people that work there to the people that play there are larger than life. And yeah, it would be very fun.
I think that would be awesome.
Do you have any other story, like just to maybe end this little segment of like a memorable experience with a customer or?
When I was dealing, it was actually, I was up there for a big valley. The casino manager called in a favor. She was short-staffed. And I said, yeah, I've got 4 days. I'll come up there. And so I was dealing roulette, which is a whole lot of fun if you ever get the opportunity.
Okay.
And it was Big Valley Jamboree. So there was, you know, 100,000 people just outdoors camping. And there was a big rainstorm. So everybody came in, right? And we had a full table of roulette. And there was he was probably a 20-year-old kid with his friends, a little bit too much to drink. And he was betting $10 chips. And he ended up hitting one number right on it. For I think it was $1,600, and he gave me a $100 tip, and I was like, "Oh, that's amazing! Like, thank you, whatever." And he looks at me afterwards, and he says, "You do that again, and I'll give you half of it." And sure enough, I hit the number again on the very next spin, and all his buddies were there holding him accountable, and he gave me an $800 tip on that.
Oh,
so it was pretty cool. And then the next day, I saw him walk back into the casino and bleed all that $2,000 back in. So he didn't ask for the tip back though. So that was nice.
Good on him.
Yeah, some integrity.
Do you find, like, how do you not root for people when you're dealing?
You do.
Like, right?
You know, I honestly think when you talk about customer experience, it makes no difference to you as a dealer, to your paycheck or anything. You're going to get more money if they win. Mm-hmm. So, you know, make them have fun, make them comfortable, let them know that you're rooting for them.
Yeah.
And
essentially, you're teaching them the game sometimes too, right?
Because totally.
People are coming in, they haven't played card games before.
Yeah. And that was like, you know, being in education, like I love that. Teaching people, I mean, even it is to gamble, but I do love that aspect, and you know what? Yeah,
I have never played roulette. I have no idea how to play it. Do you know how to play?
I mean, you're basically just betting on colors or numbers.
Okay,
or spin a wheel.
Yeah, a segment of numbers.
Do you know the nickname for roulette?
No,
it's the devil's game. Do you know why?
Tell us.
If you add up every single digit on that board, it comes up to 666.
No, it does not.
Check it out,
Chris. Save that for episode 666.
If you were to add up, nobody will remember that 300, 700, 500 episodes from now.
Well, I'm gonna look that up and make sure it's true. So guys, just give me a sec.
Wow.
This
This segment is brought to you by Veldhuizen Construction. They have been building incredible homes for over 30 years. The Veldhuizen team will guide you step by step through the design and build process. The finished product will be your design, your selections, your beautiful home. If you're looking to build in central or northern Alberta, call today to get started. Go to veldhuizen.ca or see the show notes to get in touch.
Mike, you like gambling and you like sports. What do you think about sports gambling?
Best of both worlds.
Yeah. So, when you watch sports, are you playing making bets?
Very rarely. Like occasionally, if I do, it's something completely ridiculous that the odds of happening are so astronomical that it's not going to happen, and I bet $1 or I bet $2.
Okay.
But yeah, with any stakes of money, I don't.
Like if it hits, it'll pay big.
Oh yeah, like I think me and a group of my friends down in Calgary, on the last week of the NFL Sunday, we bet on every single underdog because all the like quarterbacks are sitting and stuff like that. And quite often our $1 bet, if it hits, pays out like I think it was last one was $1.2 million or something. So,
oh my.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it doesn't happen though. We still have not won it.
I should get out on that.
Yeah.
I like that risk.
You'd lend $1 for that?
I think I would.
Good pot odds.
Like, what are your thoughts just generally on the proliferate, like just sports gambling has blown up, regulations were changed. We talked about that last episode. You can bet on everything. There's ads all over the place. Do you have thoughts on that? Do you have opinions? Does it bother you? Do you love it?
I don't know. I think like gambling had such a kind of negative stigma and still does. I think it's becoming more mainstream. And I think as long as things are kind of in check and, you know, the proper regulations and you know, safeguards are in place. It could be positive, especially like within Alberta, such a substantial portion of it goes to charitable organizations that, you know, there is some give back to the community. I mean, it's tough on the individual if they lose, but.
So even even now when I watch NHL games, I still can't stand how much of it it's pushed in your face. Do you care?
I think I do. Yeah. And I have to preface that with I think because, you know, you almost become numb to it at a point, right? And I think that's kind of where we're at with our TV ads. That being said, sports is still about sports to me. It's not about gambling, and I don't think it ever will be. Mm-hmm. It can take a really boring game occasionally and turn it into something to root for, but for the most part, I think, you know, if I'm tuning in to watch sports, it's to watch sports, not to watch a game that I'm betting on or anything like that. So,
yeah, I think the part that, and we probably talked about this on the last episode, is for kids, like people who can't legally gamble yet, they're still seeing those ads, and it is becoming part of, like, for you, sports is sports, but for like my son, what's the difference? Like, he might grow up not knowing the difference between just watching hockey and gambling. Like, those two things go hand in hand.
Yeah.
So that worries me a bit. And you mentioned earlier, like, if we can have the right safeguards in place, it's probably not a problem. But what are some of those safeguards? Like, what is that regulating the ads? Is it?
I think that's a step, right? I do think that they're kind of oversaturated with, you know, advertisements. And even when you have the mid-game intermissions and stuff and you've got your speakers on there, it's the FanDuel line of the night or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you see those things that are actually right in the programming now, right? I think that needs to be removed. Keep the sports about sports. Is there a place for advertising? For sure. But I don't think it needs to be as, you know, kind of shoved down your throat with it. So
I don't know if it's a generational thing. Like when I'm watching, that comes on and I just turn the channel because I honestly don't even know what they're talking about. But when I see like my kids and their friends watching the Super Bowl, like they're on their phone, I'm like, oh, what are you guys checking out? And they're, it's like, wow, we're on parlaying or I'm adding bets to as the game's going on. The bet lines are changing and new things come up that they can bet on. It's just like how they're watching the game now. It's just interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it can create like a false sense of excitement in something that you might not necessarily be interested in. Right. Like I think you know, even the Super Bowl this year, there were two teams that I really did not care about. But I'm sure if I had a couple of dollars on the game, I would have paid a little bit more attention and, you know, had some more interest in it.
I thought you were a noted Swiftie.
I am a Swiftie, but I mean, you know,
it only goes.
Yeah. He also football separates it for that me, from
so,
sport.
Yeah.
So I was going to mention, Tim Donaghy, who in 2007 resigned from the NBA. He was an official in the NBA. You guys know the story. And he admitted to officiating games he was gambling on himself.
Oh.
and affecting the spread, like affecting making foul calls at certain points, which basketball is pretty open to that kind of game.
I think the refs probably influence basketball more than any other, the score anyway.
I was going to ask what Mike thought about that. You're a basketball guy. You played at a very high level. Like, do you think that it's the most susceptible to shady ref interference?
I don't think it's most susceptible. I think all sports are kind of aligned with that. But when you're talking about betting and you can, you know, bet a spread where it's like, you know, this team's supposed to win by 6 points or whatever, it's easy for a ref to make a call based on their judgment that can put a team on a free throw line and change that without being too noticeable. I think in a game like soccer and hockey where you only have three or four goals scored in a game, it's much different to impact that. But in basketball, when you're, you know, you've got 200 points plus scored, you know, it's pretty easy to get away with one, right?
Yeah.
So
I guess when the reason I bring that guy up is because that was in 2007, but I
like before sports betting was a thing, really,
before it's become what it is today. I think some people wonder too, like, is that just going to be a bigger problem for these professional sports leagues where it's like there's so much more of it, and like you said, it's kind of exploded. Like I think we will scale back the, like, right now it's open season, we're advertising as much as possible. I feel like it could be open season on that kind of crap happening too, where like,
you know, I think, you know, when you talk about the integrity of the game, and I mentioned it with the casino, you want to make sure everything's in line and that people don't have those opportunities. I look at leagues like the NFL where they suspended a player indefinitely because he bet, I think it was $100 on one of the games in the NFL, not even when he was playing it, but because of the policies they have in place where athletes cannot bet on themselves or bet on the leagues, officials can't do that either. And, you know, with the internet being what it is now, gone are the days where you're going to your bookie and you're, you know, doing that. It's all regulated.
I wonder though, that seems like a crazy overreach. This is my cynicism coming through. I have nothing to back this up except to say, let's make an example of the player who does that, Pete Rose, whatever that guy's name is. So it looks like we're handling gambling, but in the background, we know things like the ATP and tennis and the, like, there's proof and evidence that shows those games have been, matches have been fixed for years and years. Yeah, and in soccer leagues in Europe, there's been crazy stories of betting that's happened, the mafia's involved, like behind the scenes where whole systems are rigged, but a player bets $100 on a game that isn't even, he has no control over. And like, that's where we're going to step in and show that we're hardcore on keeping sports and gambling sort of at arm's length. It's sort of like, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Well, and you know what, I think you look at what, you know, sports have become. They are so mainstream and they are multi-billion-dollar businesses where, you know, even when Donahue was there, like, the TV contracts for the NBA were substantially less, right? So the money that was being exchanged was not there. Whereas now you're dealing with billions and billions of dollars and, you know, a public image that is so much harder to keep squeaky clean because of social media and all that. So you have to take those steps, I think. And
I think I'm a little more cynical. Like, I think I do kind of worry about normalizing it so much that it's just like it's ingrained in the game. Like, you say keep it separate from sports, but it's like, it's not.
You're right.
I guess if gambling's legal, it's not going to be out of sports, no matter what. And so it's finding the balance. I think that's good. I just feel like maybe we're a little out of balance at this point and maybe we need to regulate. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like Canada, these are Canadian laws we're focusing on. Like, they've changed very quickly.
Yeah.
And so, like, did we do our due diligence in you know, covering our bases? Maybe not.
I think Canada's just catching up to the rest of the world real quick, right? I think there's been such a push in, you know, the United States with online gambling, and, you know, you get all those offshore ones that are kind of there. So, you know, with the huge revenue that it can bring, you know, why wouldn't our governments step in and do this? And why wouldn't different, you know, groups jump into the fray? So,
yeah, I still struggle a little bit with the premise of like the revenue comes from people's loss, right? Like, that's how, and it's predictable. It, you know, it's a, like, a reliable revenue stream because people are going to lose money. So I struggle with that a little bit. But I also think it's fun to gamble. So like, I get, there's some hypocrisy there too, because the advertisements for, what do they call it, Alberta Gaming or whatever, that's on every hockey game, bothers me. But we, like, are sponsored by a brewery who sells alcohol, which also
is connected to potentially addiction. Yeah.
Play on somebody's.
So, yeah. Right. So I get the hypocrisy there. So I just, yeah, what you just kind of phrased it. I don't know if you meant it as a question, like, why wouldn't the government pursue these things? Because it's a stream of revenue. That's my answer, is, well, that's why they wouldn't.
Yeah.
Is because it's connected to a pretty terrible disease.
Yeah.
But not to put words in your mouth, but the reason they might get involved is because then they can help regulate it too.
I think that's a piece of it. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It's kind of like anything that's like a vice, like cigarettes, right? Like for a long time, you could advertise them in magazines. We'd mentioned this on the last podcast too, with like Joe Camel, cartoon character for kids. Eventually the government catches up and is like, you know what? Like, stats are showing that people are dying from your product. So we're going to all these regulations. And I feel like that will happen with the gambling thing eventually, not maybe to that level, but they'll be like, hey, there's a lot of people who are predictably having their lives destroyed. Mm-hmm. Maybe to scale it back a bit. And that's kind of what I'm hoping for. I think eventually, like, especially when it comes to kids watching.
Yeah, for sure.
In Canada.
No, you know, as a parent of young kids as well, it's something that, you know, I'm aware of. I don't let it permeate, you know, our household and stuff. And to be honest with you, the last time I've watched a sports game on live TV and not Dora the Explorer or the Paw Patrol, is quite a while. So
when are we going to get a good streaming service, like with a good, reasonable sports package? You know what I mean? Like, I almost...
Netflix just signed something with the WWE, didn't they? Did you see that?
Oh, I did see that, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So
it's happening.
Yeah. A real sport.
Yeah, they're starting with the real sports and then working backwards to...
Can you bet on that?
That'd be hilarious if you could bet on fake sports.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be hilarious.
Talk about like rife for... Jeez. I saw a thing, this is a wrestling thing, but Rick Rubin. Rick Rubin, is that his name?
He's the music guy.
Yeah,
the
music producer. He's pretty amazing, but he's a big wrestling fan. He said something like, the world is fake, wrestling is real. And I thought, there's my guy.
Insightful.
It's true. Yeah. It's so deep.
This segment is brought to you by the King's University in Edmonton, Alberta, offering an exceptional liberal arts education from a Christian perspective. King's degree programs integrate internships, work learning, study abroad experiences, and research opportunities. The King's University, bright hope for tomorrow.
Hey, Mike, years ago, you once sat us down at a computer and you said, guys, check this out. You remember this?
I do.
And you were buying digital packs of basketball cards, if I recall. Or was it football?
Football.
Football.
Yeah.
And it was this was new. This was cutting. You were cutting edge.
I was like a leader, an innovator almost.
You were an innovator.
Yeah.
And I remember being very confused, and you were explaining it to us how they worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do you guys remember this?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we were about to record an episode, and I think we did like a live, like a Zoom call or something with Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and we watched him do it before we recorded.
Yeah, like over Zoom.
I remember that.
Yeah.
During COVID.
Now that's
crazy times.
Speculation. You're buying something in the hopes it goes up in value. It's related. I haven't talked to you really about this that much since.
Sure.
Where are you at with your what do you call them? Just
NFTs,
non-fungible tokens.
Yes. Thank you, Chris.
Where do you? How many do you have? How are they doing?
Well, currently I'm sitting at over 1,000.
Wow.
Specifically with NFL ones.
Okay.
You know, there has been a roller coaster of adventure on that, where it has gone way up and way down, and we're kind of hovering around.
Okay.
Yeah,
about, so you're still up.
Yeah, I'm still up overall.
Okay.
I definitely, you know, had a nice cash out over COVID, but recently I just kind of kept the ones that I liked, and we're just riding the roller coaster right now.
Okay.
Just remind me what these are.
So this is where the confusion came last time, I think, is I tried to explain it and I got you more confused. So I'll try.
Well, this isn't really for me. I'm speaking on behalf of our listeners.
Perfect. they are non-fungible tokens. They are individual video clips, the ones that I collect at least, of NFL plays that are licensed by the NFL. They are...
And you buy them.
You can buy them.
Yeah.
You can sell them. You can trade them. There's different challenges if you have a collection of them that will get you more of them, various things like that. So
if you had watched the game, you would have seen this clip in the game, and now it exists like as a replay that is for sale?
Yes, that's a really good way. So I was actually down in Los Angeles for a football game a couple of months ago, and one of the plays from that game was turned into an NFT. So I made sure I bought that because it was one of those things where, oh, I was at that game. I remember that catch. Yeah. It was kind of neat. So yeah, but that's exactly
it. I mean, if I have the game taped on TSN, am I breaking copyright because your NFT is part of my stream?
No, no. So it is, they're licensed from whatever regulatory thing. So for this one, it's the NFL. We just own the right to that, essentially, the website that it is hosted on. Like a
virtual card, maybe?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. So you could go ahead and watch a replay, YouTube video. There is nothing that is, would be, I own or anything like that. It's still all there, but that website address that hosts essentially that token has the value to whoever wants to buy it or sell it or whatever. So,
and what would give it value?
It's just perceived market. It's like anything else where
trading cards.
Yeah.
Markets. Yeah. But is it like the highlight isn't like of a guy getting 4 yards on a,
some of them are
carrying, right? It's like a touchdown or
yeah, so some are like 4 yard carries, right? And those ones hold less value. And then you've got, you know, Travis Kelce, when we're talking about being a Swiftie, mm-hmm. You know, throwing up a little heart sign or whatever after a touchdown. Ooh, at Taylor Swift, those ones go way up. So yeah.
So in the world of NFTs and stuff, like I know there was like the Bored Ape stuff. A lot of that has come way down.
Way
like
down.
A lot of the stuff that was hyped up by a lot of celebrities and stuff, they've cashed their way out. That's burst.
Yep.
The sports stuff, it's probably not worth what it was.
Nope.
Is the community still fairly active in that world? Are you still...
It compared within to season, started? It is.
Yeah.
Right? And when I say relatively active, I think like... You know, every once in a while, I just check on the different stats and stuff. And I think the last go around I looked, there was 100,000 active users in the last month, right? Okay. So, I mean, a pretty small scope worldwide.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're talking about selling and trading things for $5 to $10 or whatever it is,
yeah,
it's good
like,
enough.
It's kind of gone back down to a relatively sustainable level. Like, yep. There's still people interested in that, kind of world, but
yeah,
okay,
but you know, you still get the occasional sale where, you know, something sold for $42,000 or whatever, man. and it's just because of rarity or, you know, nostalgia, whatever it might be. But yeah,
and you were saying like COVID years, people got way more active in all kinds of trading.
Yeah, I think they were missing a lot of, you know, I'll speak personally, I was missing a lot of the sports. Mm. So I think that was kind of an outlet to, you know, have that connection to the sporting figures and stuff like that. And I think a lot of people also connected with that. I know, you know, I collected sports cards for years and there was a huge demand for that during the pandemic. And, you know, I made quite a few sales that were...
Pretty good.
Yeah, we'll say that.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I just think there was that need for, you know, a kind of a forced connection and to sports and to other people. And now that we're kind of back in normal times, we don't have that as much. And
let's come back down a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of cards, Chris, you just won something with your Tim Hortons hockey cards, didn't you?
So Tim Hortons hockey cards, if you are a collector, kind of run out in about October. But for some reason, the Tim Hortons at Red Deer Polytech had 2 boxes of cards left. And Mike opened a pack for me, and it says I'm an official winner of a Nick Suzuki replica jersey.
And he's my favorite player.
So I should give this to you for your birthday?
I think so.
Chris, you just made the mistake of telling them where the secret stash of Tim's hockey cards are.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
Yeah, anywhere. Better go buy the rest.
Dang. This is very small writing, but I don't really know what I have to do now. It's probably expired.
Mike, I'm just curious. We're probably... getting a little late here, but typical week for you.
Yeah.
How much are you looking at cards? How much are you thinking about cards? Hour?
Less than at this point. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, for sure.
You're probably pretty busy dude with your...
Yeah, I got kids and work and things like that and, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's busy.
Nice. Anything else, you guys? Do you want to... I think that actually kind of... don't totally get NFTs, but that was pretty good.
I tried.
I think I'm kind of there.
All right.
And it's kind of cool that it was like this new thing. It blew up maybe too much, and now it's settled back down. It's like a rhythm.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll buy one.
You know what? I'll sell you one.
Yeah?
Yeah. $1.
$1?
$1 for you.
My booker. Bookie?
Yeah. Bookie. That's
a booker. Or a booker.
So, you guys, our time has been used really, really well, and we have a little extra time here. So, Tyler, mm-hmm. do you want to go to the casino?
I would love to go to the casino.
Mike, are you down?
100%.
You can maybe show us how to do it. I think I've been to one casino when I was like 22 years old.
Yeah.
I took in $30, left with $40. That's all I ever did.
Big win.
So I'm up 10.
Yeah.
This might wreck that, actually.
Hey, I've only been to a casino once as well.
Yeah.
But I played in a poker tournament. This is going to be a little brag, or see, maybe this isn't as impressive as I think.
Yeah, might be.
But on my very first hand in a poker tournament, I got a royal flush.
That's impressive.
Is that impressive?
I have never had a royal flush.
You almost want to wait though, like till you're into it. People are gambling. Yeah. Or did you win much money with it?
No, there was a limit at the point in the tournament. Shoot.
So. Like you're not hooked for life on that. Like you think that'd be like a starting point to a lifelong.
Like this is a sign.
That's as bad as it's gonna get.
The universe wants
royal flush after royal flush.
A poker player.
This is easy to win all this money.
Yeah.
And so, how much did you win the tournament?
I ended up 10th overall. Okay. So I won a little bit.
Out of 12?
I don't know. Mike, it seemed like a big deal.
People are... would a person who is a gambler also be a risk taker in another area of life?
I believe so. Yeah, I think that people have been taking risks and it's grown people for a long time and you know, helped us survive in a lot of ways. And I think there is that, you know, sense of curiosity and wonder of what could be. So when you see gamblers and that was, you know, when I was working in casinos, I would see that often is, you know, the dream, right? They would go to that slot machine that had $1 million payout, or they would, you know, hit the table and try and get the hands that pay out monsters and leave there with, you know, their next year's salary. It doesn't happen often, but I think, you know, those people are either, inherently risk takers. Mm-hmm. They're okay with that. Or they are, no, I don't know what else.
Yeah.
Addicted.
I was thinking like,
I thought about that.
Is being a risk taker like genetic or do you kind of, can you nurture that? Cause I'm not a risk taker at all. Like I don't even want to lose $10 today, but whatever. Like, that's not part of my personality, but I wonder if that's genetic or just.
I find it almost not as so much risk taking, but like for me, it's the competition of it almost, mm-hmm. right? Like you know, being an athlete and growing up just competing constantly and trying to either better yourself or, you know, better your team and best someone.
Yeah.
I find that is the, when I play cards or when I go and play poker with friends and stuff, I want to kick their butt.
You sound like Michael Jordan in The Last Dance.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So
I took that personally.
That's there's risk taking in sports too, right? Like it's not financial, but you have to, if you want to win the game, you probably have to put something on the line.
Yeah. Well, and right? Sorry.
No, that's.
Yeah. I think when, you know, you talk about those high profile athletes that dedicate themselves to something, they risk family lives. They risk their, you know, their health. They risk so many different facets to get that one ultimate mm-hmm. outcome. I think there's a lot of connections between, you know, competition and gambling and risk. So
your perspective on this is interesting because it's like an optimistic view of it. And it's been interesting to hear you talk about it.
Yeah. Well, it's been nice having the podcast finally, Mike.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. I can stop giving you a hard time for it now.
Yeah.
So come back for episode 224.
And it's not even over because we're going to go put our family on the line right now.
What are the risks here?
Let's go, guys. Let's
okay. All right. Sounds good.
See you there. Okay, guys, so we just got to the casino here, and Mike really taught us well, because I lost $20 in about 5 minutes. Mike, how'd you do?
I lost $20 in about 3 minutes.
Yeah, a little quicker. And Tyler, what'd you do?
I broke even.
He's the big winner here.
Yeah, because I didn't gamble anything.
I'm still playing.
Chris is still playing. We're watching him right now. He's got a decent stack of chips left. This was roulette.
Yes.
And I don't think I ever really understood what I was doing, but it was fun.
Yeah, there you go.
How'd that go for you?
You know what? It was an enjoyable 3 minutes.
Yeah. So I guess, Tyler, that's kind of my confession for the episode is that I just blew $20. I was up $10 on casinos before today. Now I'm down 10.
Yeah, that's a good confession.
Yeah.
My confession is that I didn't play, I guess. But also, maybe I was less honest than I could have been throughout the episode about how much I don't like casinos. I was telling Mike when we walked in here that I didn't like this. And it's because I didn't see any joy. But at this table where you guys played, there was some joy. Like it looked fun.
It was kind of fun.
Yeah. So I get how there can be joy here, but I probably undersold my disdain for casinos earlier in the episode.
Was that to placate our guest?
A little bit, trying to be harmonious.
Yeah.
But I kind of forgot how many bright lights and what machines there are, where it's just people sitting by themselves. Doesn't look like they're having fun. Forgot about it.
Mike, can you just explain to me betting on red or black? What are the odds of winning? What do you get? What do you pay out if I bet red?
If you bet $5 on red and it hits red, you win $5.
So you're doubling your money if you hit.
Yes.
So you have half a chance to double your money.
Not quite.
No.
There's those green numbers in there that make it a little less than half. So.
Actually, I didn't know that. I probably could have made a lot of money today. So Chris, we had to wait for him to finish. And how'd you do?
I lost all my money also. $20. But I was, you know, up a little, down a little.
Yeah. Was that fun?
Yeah, it's fun. I kind of don't know the rules, but I kept going just between evens and odds and reds and blacks.
Okay, so we're out. We're down 60.
Yeah.
Should we keep going?
Nope, I'm good today.
Where's the blackjack table?
Do you have a quick confession or a recommendation before we take off? Because this is the end of the episode.
Well, I probably should confess to Shanna that I just lost $20. Was that your guys' confession?
That was mine too, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Do you want to recommend the casino or not? Tyler?
I recommend playing games with friends. Yeah.
And if you want to play a game with us, how do you get a hold of the show?
Please send an email to Mike McCorkinill at rdpsd.ab.ca or harmoniousgentleman at gmail.com.
Cool.
Yeah, or follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook. Basically it.
Cool. Mike, thanks again.
Thanks for having me, guys. It was fun.
Yeah, it's fun hanging out. We might not come back to a casino again for a while, but I'm still glad we came in here.
Stings a little.
Okay. Well, listeners, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time on
the Harmonious Gentlemen
Gentle Betters
Podcast.
Let's get the hell out of here. So we're doing a bonus game on the way out. It's this little slot machine. We're each going to pick two numbers. So Tyler, I'm going to go with 40.
And Brett Kulak.
40 for me. That's and... Oh, 22 is mine, but I'll go 33 for Henrik. We are going to bet it all. So we lost more money. See you next time.